Could we be living in a simulated universe? Elon Musk, of course, he thinks so. What about others? Linda Moulton Howe went out to investigate this story, and whoa, what a doozy. We'll have her on just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. Linda Moulton Howe, of course, you know her. She's been on our program since the beginning of the program. Emmy Award-winning television producer, investigative reporter, author, has her investigative website called earthfiles.com. And Linda, what an incredible discovery of these seven planets in another solar system with their sun. What a great story.
Oh, and the fact that they are each about the size of our Earth, and all seven are between, if they were in our solar system, George, this is hard to fathom, they would all seven be between the sun and Mercury. All seven, that's how close.
Wow.
And here we are spread out all the way.
All over the place, yeah.
Yeah, and so seven planets lined up like that, and three, they think, might even have the same temperature range.
Hmm.
And a similar atmosphere as this Earth.
And water.
And water. And TRAPPIST-1 is a little less than 40 light years from here. So if we can get these wafer craft going at the speed of light, we could get there in 40 years.
And how old will we be, Linda, reporting on that one?
I want to keep going on forever,
yeah,
just like photons.
You probably will. But I got to tell you, this tells you about the amazing things going on in the universe, a story you're working on right now.
Well, I tell you, remember last month in my January 2017 Coast broadcast, I interviewed Phoenix resident Jerry Wills about his November 1998 trip with his bride Kathy to Lake Titicaca, Peru.
Mm-hmm.
And there, Kathy saw Jerry disappear into the rock doorway known as Oramumuru. And then Jerry reappeared in a flash of light after being in what he thought was another universe, where an intelligent voice showed him a laboratory experiment to create and study a universe. And the voice told Jerry that our universe was the result of the other dimension's cosmic experiment. Well, is our universe a computer simulation? That question keeps coming up in media, science journals, public conferences. A few months ago at the Recode Code computer in Los Angeles, Elon Musk, who owns SpaceX and Tesla, was asked that exact question, and he said, the odds we are in a base reality is one in billions, meaning he thinks the odds are high that we are in a simulated universe. And then on April 5th, 2016, at the American Museum of Natural History in New York, astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson moderated a debate, is the universe a simulation? And one of those physicists on that debate was James Gates. He's a professor of theoretical physics, and he researches supersymmetry and superstring theory at the University of Maryland in College Park. Well, Dr. Gates said that he was surprised to find in his supersymmetry equations codes that are commonly used to remove errors in computer transmissions to make computer browsers work on Earth. So he said, why were those codes in the equations that I was studying about quarks and leptons and supersymmetry? If they are embedded in the essence of our reality, we might have something in common with the Matrix science fiction films about humans caught in a virtual reality matrix produced by smart robots. Well, recently I interviewed one physicist who enthusiastically says, yes, we're in a computer simulated universe. He is Tom Campbell, now 72 years old. He had a 30-year career working for U.S. Army Intelligence in Charlottesville, Virginia, beginning in the early 1970s. He never completed his Ph.D. in experimental nuclear physics at the University of Virginia because he left to do analytical intelligence work for the Army. Then, during the Reagan administration, Tom also worked for the Space and Missile Defense Agency, and he did risk analysis for the Ares rocket tests at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama, and he lives there today. After Tom Campbell retired from government assignments, he never stopped working on his conviction that this is a simulated universe by something projecting information from another dimension that caused the original digital Big Bang. Tom is co-author on a new paper to be published this year entitled On Testing the Simulation Hypothesis. His ideas began in 1972 when he worked with Robert Monroe to train people how to go out of their bodies. Here now is applied physicist Thomas Campbell from Huntsville, Alabama.
In about 1972, I met up with Bob Monroe. And Bob Monroe is the fellow who wrote Journeys Out of the Body, an ultimate journey. He had a farm called Whistlefield Farm, and on that farm he built a laboratory for the study of consciousness. It was like, build it and they will come. He built it, and myself and another friend of mine who was an electrical engineer, we ran into Bob, and Bob was looking for some scientists to study consciousness, and we volunteered with the idea that he would teach us what he knew about out-of-body and that sort of thing, and we would be his free scientists that would make sure we had good protocols and did research. So my interaction with Bob from that time on, which is around 1972, for the next 6 years was about 20 hours a week. We'd go out every evening after work, and from 6:30 or 7 in the evening all the way to like 2 o'clock in the morning, we'd spend with Bob in the lab, and then we'd come out on weekends. A lot of time with Bob, and he did teach myself, and Dennis Menerick was the double E that went with me. He taught us about out-of-body and how to go and how to get there whenever we wanted to and get there easily. So we started doing research about how did it work. Now, I'm a physicist, so what I do is model reality. That's what physics is all about. So my mission was to find out, what is it? What are the limitations? And we did mostly evidential things at first, because both Dennis and I were like, convince us, you know, we're not going to believe it until it's our own experience. So he had to have us do a lot of evidential things, remote viewing, healing, going places. What's the number I just wrote on the blackboard while we're in another room in a booth? And Dennis and I went on a couple of out-of-body adventures together where he had us where we couldn't hear each other, electromagnetically and acoustically isolated booths. He was talking to both of us independently, and there we were having conversations with each other, answering each other's questions on the tapes. So we just did a lot of stuff. So that's where my background in consciousness studies comes from. It's really mathematics. It's computer code that's computing our reality. So we've got all kinds of experiments that show the same thing that Gates did. You look into reality close enough, and what you find is that it's not material. It's information-based. Information-based means it's computed. Computed means first computer code, and if there's computer code, you're going to find error correction.
How does Jim Gates' error-correcting codes embedded within the equations of supersymmetry that describe fundamental particles, from a physicist's point of view, how unusual is it to find these error-correcting codes in the equations of supersymmetry, and what does that mean to you?
Yeah, well, you see, what he's done is he's taken string theory, and in order to model our reality, they have to use equations to do that. And then in those equations, lo and behold, there looks like there's computer code. An information system wants to evolve by lowering its entropy. And it does that by organization.
The key to this is that the projector of the virtual reality has to be in another dimension. Good at Harvard is talking about there being an infinite number of universes. Others think that universes might even be somehow embedded within each other in some way. If the projector of the virtual reality is in another dimension, and the projection then involves holographic projection, that would explain why there is this merger of two concepts, the holographic universe and the simulated computer universe, because what's being projected is holographic from the macro down to the micro?
The holographic universe is a nice metaphor, but there's no need for holography to get involved in it at all. The simulated universe doesn't need holography to make any connections. It simply computes a data stream. The data stream is sent to a player. The player interprets that data stream as the virtual reality. Everything takes place in consciousness. Consciousness is the computer. Consciousness is the player. That's what's going on. The whole game is played in consciousness. The Matrix movie didn't need any holography either. That's just an additional complication that's unnecessary to get to the answer. Although it is a popular metaphor, partly because in a hologram, every piece of it has the information of the whole. But that's also true in fractals. Every piece has all the information of the whole. And this system of information, a fractal pattern is a pattern of information. That's why a computer can compute fractals, because it's just information. And the fractal has that same attribute of all the information, part of the whole. So you end up with a process fractal that creates everything. And there are also places, like the places you get to in outer body, that have very loose rule sets, as opposed to physical universes, which tend to have more complicated rule sets, more detailed, tighter rule sets. So it's all just virtual realities. When your avatar dies, the consciousness doesn't die. You know, just like when your elf dies, the player doesn't die. So the consciousness doesn't die. The consciousness goes on. It gets back in the game again. When it does that, that consciousness ends up in a different virtual reality than this virtual reality. That's a transition virtual reality. Dreaming is another virtual reality that we experience. The dream reality isn't any less real than this physical reality. It's just different. It's a different virtual reality. Different rule set, different data stream. And one of the neat things about it is that once you understand how consciousness works, then you can turn around and derive quantum mechanics and relativity from the ground up. And the amazing thing is that when you do that, quantum mechanics and relativity now get along with each other rather than being opposed to each other. And quantum mechanics is no longer a weird science. It's just a logical science. You can look at a quantum mechanical problem and just look at the logic of it and say what the answer is. You don't need to do a lot of math. It's a perfectly understandable thing. And I do lectures and I talk about the science, I talk about the physics, but then I usually spend as much time talking about what does it matter to the individual? You know, why should you care? People sitting in the audience, why is this important to you? And it's very important. Everything about their life, their choices, their relationships, it matters to all of that. So it's not just physics. It's much bigger than that. And the neat thing I found is once you understand consciousness, you can derive physics. You see, the causality runs the other way. It doesn't run from the physical world to the brain, and then the brain somehow creates consciousness. That's wrong. It doesn't run that way. Causality runs from consciousness to a virtual reality, to the rule set, which orders this virtual reality. So once you understand consciousness, you can take that same understanding and come up with a logical quantum mechanics that isn't weird science.
What will the consequences be if you, with your colleagues in this new paper on testing the simulation hypothesis, end up with a confirmation that we are in a computer-simulated universe? What are the consequences for physics, space travel, us, any practical consequences?
Yes, there's some huge consequences. I mean, there's always consequences to science, but that's not the major consequence. Science will change from the ground up. It will have to get rid of its beliefs in a material reality and will have to see this in terms of information. And that will make a huge difference. But that step brings into a question, well, if this is a simulation, who's in charge?
Right.
Who's the programmer? Where is it simulated from? So suddenly questions about this being not the reality, but a subset of something bigger. And what is this bigger thing? You see, it brings up all of those metaphysical questions, suddenly have scientific rigor, because scientific rigor says this is a virtual reality, then it cannot be computed from inside this virtual reality. It has to be computed from elsewhere, from another reality frame. And so consciousness must be in another reality frame. So the second step is that they realize that consciousness is the computer. If you take those two steps, once you realize that consciousness is a computer, it's just a logical inference to come out with love is the answer. That's why we're here. This is a virtual reality, okay? It's a trainer, just like a flight trainer. This is an entropy reduction trainer. And suddenly, if love is the answer, cooperation, caring about other is the way you evolve, and the self-centered fear thing, fear is the way you de-evolve, that will make a huge difference in not just for the scientists, but for everybody walking around on the planet. And then you realize that because this is a trainer, you know how trainers are, if you get it right and you do the right thing in a trainer, you get rewards. You know, if you don't crash your airplane in a flight trainer, you get to continue to fly it. So people will realize that as they work in the direction that they're meant to work in, what our goal is, what our challenge is, and our mission is, everything starts to work good. Instead of a constant struggle, you find that life is good. You find happiness. You find satisfaction. All of the good stuff starts to fall at your feet once you start cooperating with the system and growing up and getting rid of the fear and becoming love. So it has the potential to change everything at a very fundamental level.
I love how he said, who's the programmer?
That's right. And in the next half hour, we're going to see some very interesting insights from him about the whole question of soul recycling, the yin and yang issues that we have in this universe. And I find this fascinating because physicists today still argue, is there enough evidence for a holographic fractal or not?
Great stuff, Linda. I mean, truly great stuff.
Well, I think it's just the most fascinating.
And bizarre.
Yes, it is. It really is. And for the whole rest of Coast tonight, we're just going to keep going deeper and more amazing.
It just goes
from one amazing facet of all of this to another.
Do you think this is really possible?
Yeah, I do. And you know, Nassim Harriman.
Harriman, yeah.
Yeah, he's been arguing for a fractal holographic universe his entire career, and he is doing papers like everybody else, and I think that's one of the signs, George. There are just so many more papers that are coming all of the time, and I remember one that I looked for today, and it was back in 2011. How a holographic universe emerged from a fight with Stephen Hawking. And that was when there were the beginnings of these fights that now today we are getting more and more people who are very, very strong physicists. And Campbell and the group that he's working with, what they want to propose are a series of tests that they think they want somebody with the, there's only two or three universities in the world that could do the test they're proposing.
Right, right.
And if they got a yes, my God. And so they want to do the test.
Well, why not?
It's
exciting.
It is. It's extremely exciting. And the issue of what are we humans in this universe, and you get jump to, if it's a holographic universe, if there is another intelligence that has the ability to manipulate and create and experiment with universes like what Jerry Wills described a month ago, then our relationship to the universe isn't just question that has to be answered here soon by governments in Nevada.
Well, let's talk more in the next half hour about this incredible story with Linda Moulton Howe. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Welcome back to Linda Moulton Howe, who continues her story about the very strange simulated universe. It is possible, because everything is so strange in the universe as we try to figure out God and why we're here. You know what? Maybe that's possible, but still that doesn't answer the question, Linda. How did the formulas of the software developers, us, how did they get here?
You can keep this shell game going forever. If we're in a layered universe with many dimensions, parallel universes, then the issue of which came first, who, what, and why, is so big that probably it would take an infinity to actually ever know what the source was. But what we heard in the first half hour from applied physicist Thomas Campbell is that he thinks our universe is a simulation projected from another dimension, because the projector cannot be in the same simulated universe that the players, us, are in, and that it is designed, this universe, to be an entropy reduction trainer, which is to evolve souls toward peace, light, and love, and away from war, darkness, and hate. Tom Campbell is also the author of a 3-volume book that he entitled, sort of tongue-in-cheek, My Big Toe. But toe, all caps, T period, O period, E period, is something that physicists have used for a long time, and it stands for the theory of everything. So he's done 3 volumes on this. And my interview with him now continues after I ask him how he thinks reincarnation fits into his hypothesis that this is a computer-simulated universe.
So we're consciousness, we're making choices, we're trying to evolve, which means move us more toward becoming love. So that's what we do. You can't do that in a one shot. It doesn't work. All evolution comes and goes. You take what you did last time and you start with that and you add to it. Learning is that way. Learning is cumulative. You can't just, at 3 years old, take calculus. It won't work. You got to start with arithmetic. So in order to learn, it has to be a cumulative process. So you accumulate through lifetimes your choice making and you grow. Every time you go through a lifetime, you decrease your entropy if you're successful. Or if you increase it, you de-evolve a little bit. The next time, you get to start where you stopped last time. And that's why we go through these cycles. And our mission is to grow to become love. That's where we're headed.
Where do you think the avatars of history fit into all of this?
Well, they are people who understood some part of this. And as they understood it, they had to put it into terminology that suited them and their times and the other people. So some people just happened to figure it out, and other people were sent here with the idea of helping others figure it out.
I have found myself also thinking a lot about the yin and yang symbol, with a dark circle at the center of a large white landscape and a white circle at the center of a large black landscape, as if there is an equal amount of white and black pitted against each other in this universe, like it's a metaphor. Do you think that's accurate, that the yin and yang symbol is a metaphor for a universe of entropy in which everything is winding down, and that the dark versus the light seem to always be in conflict?
The dark and the light always in conflict? Yes. And the reason for that is that's the nature of free will. You see, the reason we have the good versus evil is our theme in everything, right? Movies, literature, always has been. You know, all the stories, good versus evil is the key thing. That's what we're doing here. We're trying to evolve in the positive direction, lower entropy. That's positive. We have then those that can make an opposite choice. They have free will. They can choose to be self-centered. They can choose to do other than lower their entropy. They can choose to raise it. So the reason you have evil is because there's free will, not because there has to be an equal amount of it. Now, there is this struggle between the two because they're going in opposite directions. The negative part, ones that are de-evolving, they love and enjoy chaos. those of us that are trying to work in the opposite direction, trying to work against that. We are interested in caring and cooperation and working together, and that's the opposite of chaos.
And Tom, there is a potential irony here that the physicists of this planet will be the ones that corroborate the Christ and the golden rule of love and do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Absolutely. And, you know, that was one of the big aha, kind of strange things that I didn't expect. I'm a physicist, so I'm working at this idea of consciousness, trying to understand it. And when I finally kind of figure it out, and I realize that a lot of the things that are in religious philosophy are actually true. You know, these are people who actually have seen the nature of our reality and how it works. And it's been modified, it's been bastardized, it's been changed by ego and greed and other things. But the fundamentals are, for the most part, right. And yes, science is going to be the one that legitimizes the very thing that it wanted to get rid of most back in the 1500s. It was the church that was choking science
right, and
wouldn't let science progress. So science has this gut reaction of fear when it comes to other, something being outside of this reality. They just choke on that immediately because it's kind of like the bad old days. But science is going to have to grow up and accept that we're a subset of something bigger, and our science is forcing us to go there. So yes, I see that this virtual reality is just the first step that leads to the next, that leads to the next, and it can change everything in the most profound way that anybody could imagine. And it's not just about better science. It could change everything.
Let me ask you one other big area, and that is, Einstein said that eventually we would learn that time was an illusion, that past, present, and future were simultaneous. If Einstein were right, then consciousness, as we know it, we would have no free will. We would be living through a time stream in which everything was already past, present, and future.
Right.
And therefore, we, the players in this virtual reality game, really have no free will.
When you do physics, you have equations. And sometimes the equations have attributes that are just non-physical. And physicists do this all the time. And when they get their equation goes into a logic that just doesn't play out here, then they just ignore it. And that's one of those things. So Einstein's relativity connects this time cone and there is no free will, and that's just wrong. It doesn't work that way. Where time comes in is that you have a computer, ones and zero states. So the ones and zero states can just flip. 1 0 1 0 1 0, that's a metronome. That creates time. So time is created as a technology by a data information system. Now, this universe of ours, this physical universe, has its own clock. It's a simulation. And the simulation has an outer time loop, a delta T, that you calculate all the things in the simulation, and then you increase delta T by one more delta T, one more little chunk of time, then you calculate everything again. Then you increase delta T and calculate everything again. That's how simulations work. Time progresses. So we, in this universe, this virtual reality, we have a delta T that is our quantum of time, and time is quantized, just like space is quantized. It's like everything else is quantized because it's all digital. So time is a real thing, and time always moves forward, and we do indeed have free will. Consciousness can't exist without free will. Consciousness is the choice maker. You can't make a choice if you have no free will. The choice means nothing with no free will. There is no game to play. There's nothing to do. There's no purpose if there is no free will.
And why do you think that controlled remote viewing is so accurate? How does it work?
Oh, the reason it works is that it's getting data from a database. That delta T is like 10 to the minus 44 seconds. So our database goes right up to just 10 to the minus 44 seconds from the instant of the present. So that's a pretty current database. And when you remote view, the way it works is you have an intent. You have to learn how to get your own intellect out of the equation. And that's what the remote viewers have to be able to do. They have to learn to not second guess, to not judge, to just get what they get, to be open and get it and report it without trying to second guess it. So that's why they use this double blind stuff where they don't have any idea what's in the envelope. They just go there, you see, because that actually helps them. Doesn't make it harder. That makes it easier for them because they have less information to mess them up with. So you can get information on anything, anybody, any process. You can remote view into the future and you go into a probable database. You can remote view to the past. But if you're not careful, you'll remote view into one of those lines of past that didn't actually happen. So you have to be aware that you want just the history that did happen in this physical reality.
Yeah, Ingo Swann, his remote viewing of Jupiter, everything that he remote viewed years ago, we've confirmed except one thing, and it still may be true. He said there were hard mountains at the center of Jupiter.
Mm-hmm. You can get data on anything you want. You just have to have an intent. But now it gets confusing because the way this virtual reality works is that it's computed, but it has some databases that it keeps. One of the databases it keeps is called the probable future. You take all the things that's in the present and you project, present trends continue, and you project them into the future. Well, that's just a probable future. It's not a done deal because we have free will here and we can make decisions that weren't the ones guessed at in the probable future. Also, as time goes on, as that little delta T clicks on, then what was in the probable future then becomes the present. We make our choices. After that, it becomes the past. And in the probable future, you have all the things that can possibly happen and the probability that they will happen. Then in the past database, you have all the things that could have happened and the probability that they did happen or that they would have happened. And in that past database, you have a thread, which is just all the stuff that did happen. Now, these databases exist. So you can go out of body, you can get into an altered state, and you can go into the future probability database. You can have precognitive dreams that show you the probabilities of things that will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not that far out, a lot of those things will come true because that probability holds. In other words, it doesn't get changed. You can go into the past. You can look at past lives. You can look at other past things in a lot of detail if you wish. It's all there, but it's in a database. The present is where all the choices are made. The future is only probable, and the past is a database. Virtual reality has its own clock, but there is a master clock. Time is a real thing, not an illusion.
God, this is a strange story.
Well, it is so fascinating that everything that I brought up with him, including this whole issue of remote viewing, he had such a penetrating answer. And in fact, in talking to him a bit about remote viewing and how it would work, when you start thinking about if we are in a simulation in a computer and the whole universe is information data, suddenly I began to understand a little more how our minds could interface with far distances like Ingo did in 1973. I have in front of him a copy of the raw data that was released when he did the remote viewing on Jupiter. And over time, so many of the things that he said on April 27, 1973, I think he was at SRI at Stanford. And here he was using only his mind's interface with this universe around us. And one of the, as you read this, he talks about that was one of the first things that caught his attention, quote, very high in the atmosphere of Jupiter, there are crystals. They glitter. Maybe the stripes are like bands of crystals. Maybe like rings on Saturn. And these are not far out like that. These are close within the atmosphere. I bet you that they would reflect radio probes. And Hal Puthoff was one of the people involved in this particular exercise and said probably these crystals would. Well, that was 73. 6 years later, in 1979, for the very first time, we had some information that there were rings around, thin rings around Jupiter. But it was the remote viewing of Ingo Swann that saw it first. He also talked about liquid compositions on Jupiter. And it took until 1976, quote, Science News, in fact, liquidity seems to be the most salient overall characteristic of Jupiter. And this was, again, after Swann. And the most interesting is his saying that he was seeing what he thought were 30,000 feet high mountains. And he even had a direction for them. And right now, I think that we still don't have a confirmation, but he has been so right on everything else, George, that tonight, this issue of being in a simulated universe and our minds having the ability, like an Ingo Swann, to interface with a planet and be so accurate, there has to be something that the mind can tune in to the information database in this universe.
Can you imagine, Linda, the technical complexity of all this? If this is indeed true, if all we are is some kind of hologram or digital universe, it's mind-boggling.
It's like waking up. What I started to say is waking up to being a robot, and then my mind went... And they're now talking about what is called the singularity of the robots, computers on this planet being smarter or as smart as humans. And guess what the year is? About 2026.
Not too far away.
Yeah. And then what happens? Everything is moving exponentially, and everything is moving toward data, information, zeros and ones.
You think when we die, they just simply, in this kind of universe, delete us?
Well, I loved his answer, that you can't move toward reducing your entropy so much that you can move to a higher dimension unless you really work hard in an entire lifetime to not increase entropy. Entropy is the winding down of everything. That's why entropy is hate, entropy is war, entropy is death. If you want to go completely the opposite of entropy, completely the opposite of all of that darkness, and you want to live an entire life where you are decreasing entropy and increasing anti-entropy, then his concept that in this simulated universe, if it is designed to be a trainer for souls, and that's the whole reason we're here, then recycling in and out and around would suddenly make a lot of sense.
Well, it sure would. I think of you as a great investigative reporter, but also almost like a scientist, Linda.
I am.
and with that... And I'm going to ask you this to consider it for a question at the top of the hour when we come back.
Okay.
What do you think of God? Do you believe in God?
I believe in a divine field as profoundly as the chair I'm sitting in.
All right. All right. Keep that thought, because we'll talk a little bit about that when we come back. Or maybe we'll hold off on that until we get to Conversations with Linda, the third hour. We'll have more time to do that, because you've got more on the holographic universe. And that's up next on Coast to Coast AM.